Okay, can you turn it up? There we go. See, I knew something was happening. Good afternoon, members. We're called to order the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development. It is Wednesday, January 22nd. We will have a couple of additional members that will be with us because, you know, they're sometimes going in between committees. But before we move into our agenda, I'd like to have everyone go around the table and quickly introduce themselves and your role on the committee. As you know, we have a couple new members and staff on the committee, so we will start to my right with Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gene Dornick. I serve District 23, which is Freeborn, Maurer, Steele, and Waseca, Faribault counties. The biggest communities would be Austin, Albertley. It's great to be here and look forward to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Champion. So Senator Susan Pa, representing Senate District 38, that's Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, and Osseo. I'm really excited to be on this committee. This is a new committee for me this year. And so I'm really excited to be here, but especially so because I finally get to work in a committee with our president and Chair Champion.
Hello, I'm Heather Gustafson. I represent SD 36, which is nine cities, but the three largest are Vadnais Heights, White Bear Lake, and Lino Lakes. I've been on jobs for the last 2 years, and it's been great, and I'm very excited for both Chair Champion and Chair Dreheim.
Hello, everyone. I'm Taylor Tidwell Bennett, the new CLA for our Senator and Chair Champion, and I'm really excited to be here and learn from everyone here on the committee.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Melton. I'm the CA for the Jobs Committee for Senator Champion.
Senator Rich Dreheim. I have seven counties in my district, starting from Jordan all the way down to Iowa, and happy to be here. I've served on the Jobs Committee all 8 years of my service in the Senate, and really looking forward to the discussion today on AI. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I am Carlin Doyle Fontaine. I am nonpartisan Senate counsel for this committee and the Labor Committee.
Hi, everyone. Hannah Grunewald-Noldner, the fiscal analyst on the Jobs Committee.
I'm Andy Larson. I'm the Republican researcher for the committee and also the committee administrator for Senator Dreheim on this committee.
I'm State Senator Fonker, representing Eastside St. Paul, and the borderline where Eastside starts is kind of vague. Some people think it was Jackson Avenue, and some people argue that it's I-35. And that my technical district is the Arcade, which leads to Highway 61, and Highway 61 has a lot of history, you know, going Highway 61. There's even a song written about Highway 61 itself. So that's where my district began, going all the way to McKnight, Maplewood. But I'm pretty much represent the entire East Side and demographic and the culture all the way to Frogtown, and you know, similarly to President Champion as well for equity. Thank you.
Well, let me say thank you to everyone who's with us and those who are around the table. Let me say that I'm so excited that you're here. I want to give a special shout out to or thanks to my co-chair, Senator Dreheim. We've been working together on this committee for quite some time, and I am really excited to have him. I also want to thank our CA, who is Tom Melton, who is rejoining us. He's been with us. He's been doing an awesome job, and I just want to make sure that I said that out loud. I am pleased to have you heard her. That's Taylor Tidwell Bennett. She's new to the committee. Just so that you know, I'm extremely proud of her because, first of all, she's from North Minneapolis, which is always good. She also went to North High School because I went to North High, so I'm a polar. But she's also a great graduate from the historically black college, Spelman College, which is, you know, really respected across the nation. So we are really excited to have her. And our job pages, Betsy Rosemark, Perrin King, Will Battle. And I have a new intern this year, two of them, and I want to just call him out just for a second. His name is Alexis Alfaro. He's from the University of Minnesota. If you stand up so that they can see you as well. I'm excited to have him. And then there's Ilabella Ojante, who goes to St. Thomas, who's not down here, but you'll see her as well. So I hope that you give her a warm welcome. So now I'm so excited about the presentation that's going to happen today. As you probably know, they know, but you probably don't know, that we scheduled this AI session four times last session.
Who's counting?
And it was canceled every time because some people on the floor was a little more talkative than we would like for them to have been. But we're excited to have these six wonderful presenters here from the University of Minnesota to help us learn about artificial intelligence. As some of you may remember, we had this scheduled, and yet we are pleased that we finally are able to learn from these wonderful experts. And obviously, AI is going to have a significant impact on Minnesota's economy and certainly its workforce. So we are excited to learn more about it today and are able to ask questions. And before we introduce them, I want to thank them for tailoring their presentation to be able to start from the basic level of what AI is so that we can all be on the same page as we as a committee and as we move forward with sharing this understanding. And to me, it's incredibly important, especially with something like AI that is changing and evolving so rapidly. So again, I want to say thank you to the University of Minnesota presenters. And with that, I will have you all introduce yourselves for the record, starting with Dr. Galen Jones, who is going to start us off. So thank you so much for being here, and thank you for still having a smile after we kept rescheduling this presentation. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Champion, Senator Dreheim, and committee members, for inviting us to share background information on artificial intelligence, the most transformative technology of our time. My name is Galen Jones. I am a professor of statistics and the director of the School of Statistics. Professor Kumar?
I am Vipin Kumar. I'm a Regents Professor at the University of Minnesota, and my expertise is in computer science and artificial intelligence.
Genevieve Melton Mukes. I'm a professor of surgery and health informatics and senior associate dean for health informatics and data science.
Dr. Jim Wilgenbusch. I run the Minnesota Supercomputing Institute and research computing more broadly.
Good afternoon, I'm Haley Bork. I'm the Managing Director for the Data Science and AI Initiative, and I have a background in artificial intelligence research and development.
Hi, I'm Jaydeep Srivastava. I'm a professor of computer science and engineering, and I work in health informatics and AI, as well as social media.
Welcome, you all. And again, make sure you speak right into that mic, because we want to make sure that we're able to hear you, and some of you have softer voices, but we want to hear about all the great information that you want to share with us. With that, Dr. Galen Jones.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Our team leads the Data Science and Artificial Intelligence Initiative at the University for the University of Minnesota system, not just the Twin Cities. The University of Minnesota has been at the forefront of many developments in data science and artificial intelligence and their application. We are all active researchers, passionate teachers, and leaders in data science and AI, and we work closely with external partners in industry and government to advance shared goals. ChatGPT certainly captured everyone's imagination a couple of years ago. It also, along the way, has already started creating jobs, especially in settings like prompt engineering is just one example. However, this is really only the very tip of the iceberg. AI systems are accelerating drug discovery, accelerating the development of new materials, accelerating scientific research, improving energy efficiency, and making education more accessible and personalized, just to name a few. These systems are rapidly developing to handle more ambitious problems, and this development shows no sign of slowing down. Many are forecasting significant economic growth from AI. For example, PricewaterhouseCoopers projects that AI will add at least $15.7 trillion to the global economy in just the next 5 years. AI is already transforming Minnesota's workforce, industries, government, and higher ed. Our team has talked to nearly all of the companies on this slide, and we've worked closely with the Innovation Minnesota Board, whose report you already have. All of these companies are actively investing in AI, and they're actively reaching out to us and other higher educational institutions to address complex challenges and upskilling of their workforce. Our economy will grow and expand from the knowledge and tools enabled through the continued advancement in machine-based learning and other assistive technologies. And Minnesota is well positioned to take advantage of this with thriving economic sectors embracing AI, a university that conducts world-class research in data science and AI and training, and a skilled workforce primed to take jobs of the future. Due to a robust innovation ecosystem, which is at least partly due to this committee's efforts, Minnesota is enjoying exciting opportunities to use AI to advance and expand existing companies and enable growth of the next generation of companies using and developing AI applications. For example, we rank quite highly in medtech and other areas that are poised to exploit and benefit from AI. We must continue to be innovators to take advantage and realize these benefits. While AI is certainly and undoubtedly a disruptive technology, it also provides fertile ground for all to advance in their pursuit of knowledge and excellence. It is already being used to reduce hiring bias, make work more accessible to those with disabilities, and personalize training. It provides assistive tools and real-time supplemental knowledge so that people can perform more complex jobs, having a better pay structure, possibly without advanced degrees. AI is creating new jobs that combine human communication, ethics, and decision-making skills with technical knowledge. It provides personalized education and upskilling opportunities that transform current jobs. It is also leading to job growth. Some examples are given on this slide, but we can just go down the list. There are many, many others. I will turn the presentation over to Professor Kumar now. The remainder of the presentation will explore a little bit more of an introduction to AI, what AI is, how we think it will impact Minnesota's economy and job creation outlook, and consider possible future directions in AI and the ways these can affect our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Senator Champions,
welcome.
Thank you. So this is to give you just a little bit of a overview of a technology that, as we all know, is dramatically changing everything in the society. And these developments are not new; they have been happening for almost seven decades. And it has come to a point, we have come to a point where no matter who you are and where you are in the world, in what sector of the economy, you have to realize that it's going to impact you one way or the other, in the sense that it doesn't matter. If you ignore it, it's going to impact you. If you follow it, it could impact you, right? And it's in our control as to what do we do with this technology. So the next few slides that I'm going to present before I turn it over to Professor Milton Marx, I just want to give you a sense of what this technology is and what its evolution has been and how Minnesota has played a role in its evolution all through the 70 years of its history that you can trace. And how, if we do it right, and again, that will be sort of, you know, the people, you know, of Minnesota, to decide as to how do you take the trajectory and move it forward. Right? It's up to us. So this is sort of what I would like to communicate to you. So as we all know, it's a breakthrough advancement that can accelerate innovation and productivity of humankind. There is absolutely no question there. It can delegate tedious parts of the work to computers and enable us humans to do things that are more complex and that cannot be done by AI today. And I say that because the AI's capabilities keep increasing. Okay? But there is a quote that I like to read from this was a quote in Star Tribune from economist David Autor. considered the academic voice of the American worker. And that is, if AI, if used well, can assist with restoring the middle class heart of the US labor market that has been hollowed by automation and globalization. So it could, if not used well, it could further the automation and global, and the, it could make it more hollow. But if you do it well, it could really go in the other direction, right? So this is, I think this would be the key message we would like to be able to communicate to you. And of course, we all know AI is in our daily lives. Nobody needs to be reminded of that. You could sort of, and even though you're hearing about AI in the last few years, a lot more than you used to hear before, but it has been changing our lives over a period of time, every sector of the economy, every sector of our living. And it can be used properly. It can be a helper and not a hazard. Of course, it has the capability of being a hazard as well. Now, we all can see examples of that, right? So, but the reason we are here, I believe, is because we are at an inflection point in this technology. Even though it has been going around, it has been sort of developing over a period of last 70 years, it's at an inflection point. This technology is at the intersection. It's not a standalone technology that somehow just dropped from the sky. It's a confluence of three different developments in technology that are sort of happening, again, over the last 70 years. And one of them is computing. And computing literally started here in Minnesota. The two places that are given credit for starting the general purpose computing, as you know of, is the company called ERA, Engineering Research Associate, founded by William Norris, and a faculty member at the University of Pennsylvania. And it turns out that the person who built the first general purpose computer was the ERA Corporation, except that they built it for the US government and it was under classified cover until 1973. So basically, this is sort of how far back the computing goes at Minnesota. And of course, I could go on, and Minnesota has been hub of computing and supercomputing and advances in computing that have driven this technology for the last seven decades. Yes.
Isn't one of the, and committee, if you have questions, you can certainly ask as they go along so that I'll make it much more worthy for you. It is my understanding that in the very beginning, when you think in terms of AI, there was at one time just computers that we would put information in a computer, and that information could regurgitate, you know, some information. But what makes AI different from just the way we historically have got information from a computer is that now it's these various data points that the computer has the ability to pull from, right? And then use that information in a way to artificially say, here's where I think something is going, or here's how I think it can or cannot help. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's okay to correct me because I've been told that I'm wrong many times, so today wouldn't be the first time. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you put it very, very nicely, and I have a slide that sort of reflects some of that transition. But the point is that as soon as the computers became available to people to use, invented in Minnesota, as I mentioned to you earlier, simultaneously with the places on the East Coast, people started to think about, could these computers become intelligent enough to do things that we can do? So this term, artificial intelligence, was coined to sort of say, hey, look, we are intelligent, we can do things that computers cannot do at this time, but could eventually they be able to do it? And it's the evolution of what computers can do from the 1940s and 50s up to now is just tremendous, in the sense that you summarize that in some ways, right? That is, until now, there will be a point I could sort of show you which could say that all of this could be reflected into the summary that you gave into the past. And then there is a turn in which we are doing something completely different that we could not have imagined 5 years ago, right? So it's, there's an inflection point, certainly, right? So this is, but this inflection point has come multiple times, but this is the one that is so big that it's really shaking everybody up, you know, for a meeting like. So computing is one. Minnesota has been a leader. Data is another one. Yeah. The availability of increasing amount of data and ability to store it and process it. Again, it has been changing and increasing over the last 7 decades. And again, Minnesota has been a leader in that area. Right? The third thing, in addition to the computing and data, it's the algorithms. It's the new ways of doing things. Senator Champion, as you mentioned, algorithms were working in certain mode until recently, and then suddenly you went into a different mode, right? And the question is, what happened? What really happened over the last 7 decades that made us brought here, right? And what I want to sort of show you is just a couple of milestones, okay? I mean, the kinds of things that you're talking about, that is a completely new way of computing that you just described, right, in your own words. We would not be talking about that 7 years ago. I mean, the technology to do that did not exist 7 years ago, right? And I'm gonna go through some of the major milestones that have happened and how they changed the trajectory of technology. And even though they may all look very technology-centric, but you would sort of get a feel for why is it that the inflection is happening today, right? So I want to take you back to a date 12 years ago, or about 13 years ago. Actually, it was 2012. The Obama White House launched an initiative on big data. Okay? So already this confluence of computing and data and algorithms has reached a point where the President of the United States had to sort of say, hey, look, there is a new age that's coming up, right? And we're going to call this it's the big data age. And there was a big initiative that was launched, and it was not launched out of vacuum. Just a year before that, McKinsey Corporation, one of the big fives, had published a report that this technology of being able to analyze large amounts of data from large amount of computers with very sophisticated algorithms can bring in trillions of dollars in improvements in economy, right? It's a report that sort of came out, initiative that came out. If you go back and read that initiative, and of course there was a series of meetings and workshops, I attended several of them, one at the White House Conference Center, that sort of led the developments that are sort of leading us to today. I mean, this is sort of what you could sort of take back from 2012 as to where we are today. But if you look at that resolution, even though the field of AI has been around for 70 years, has been called by different names, but in 2012, the focus within AI was more on being able to analyze large amounts of data. It was about big data analytics, right? Okay? So if you look at the announcement from the White House, you will not find a single mention of AI. There'll be machine learning involved in it, but not AI, right? 2012 is also the time, is the time where another stream within this algorithm community that was sort of going back to 1950s was developing in ways that it led to some breakthrough that were not noticed very well at that time. But then that's when it started. And then this new wave that started became so strong that by 2016, just within 4 years, all major economies in the world had an AI strategy. Like the Europeans, the Americans, the Japanese, the Chinese, if you are big, you're worried about it. So already what happened in those 4 years, right? Okay. 2018 and 19, the top academics who work in AI got together to create the next roadmap for AI. It's a 20-year roadmap for AI. I was part of that group in December 2018 and January 2019. We came together, prepared the report. And I'm mentioning that to you that even in that report, we could not have imagined what's happening today, okay? So the ChatGPT that you mentioned, right? The technology for that existed in 2017. It was already showing its power. And yet, this group of people who was moving this technology forward, you know, you go back to the report and you would not find any mention of that. So I'm mentioning that to you to sort of say this technology is moving so fast that those of us who are moving it forward are surprised by what was happening before and how it's coming together, right? So this is the excitement. This is also the opportunity. And what I want to again remind is that even though this is moving so fast, but some of the biggest improvements have been done historically at the University of Minnesota, by the state of Minnesota, and some of the alumni who graduated from the University of Minnesota and went on to these corporations. And I will try to give you a sense of when that has been happening all along. Just to give you a sense that this one of the 50 states of Minnesota, one of the quote-unquote average states of Minnesota, has done so much in this field and has potentially so much more potential as we go forward. Okay? So coming back to what AI could do, and Senator Champion, as you mentioned, that something happened recently, something different happened recently, some capabilities that you could not have imagined that are not happening before. So from the earliest age of AI, going back to the 40s and 50s and 60s, there was a huge interest in how do you get the computers to recognize patterns in ways the humans can. You know, I can walk into the room. If I've seen you before, Senator Champion, I would recognize you that you're Senator Champion, right? Within fraction of a second, right? If I hear a voice, you know, from someone I have talked to before, immediately I can figure out, even though I may not have talked to the person 50 years ago. I mean, you know, you all have experiences of that. So how do you recognize patterns through, humans are very good at that. But the question is, can you get computers to do it? And of course, if you can, you can do many, many more things. Can you get computers to do reasoning and planning? Can you make complex plans? So these were the two areas that attracted a lot of the attention of the scientists in AI or big data analytics for much of the last 70 decades. Okay? Starting very recently, I would say within the last 10 years, but much more importantly, within the last 7 or 8 years, an entirely new methodologies that have sort of come to be invented by people, which sort of can do this thing called generative AI, the creativity that you sort of said. Look, this is something that is no. If you go back before 10 years, certainly before, you know, even before 7 years, the kinds of things that people are talking about today could not even have been imagined. They wouldn't be even our vocabulary, right? You know, it's just like in 1900, you wouldn't sit up and say, hey, can a computer do a multiplication? Well, heck, humans have to do multiplication, right? The computers came about, they could multiply and add, but then now computers can do so, so much more. So this is the creativity part. This is the, sometimes people will call it generative AI, sometimes people call it gen AI, but this is the one that is that's the field that sort of telling everybody that there are applications that could not have imagined before. That's the one that sort of brings you to a point where some of these biggest technology companies have this multi-trillion dollar valuation of it's getting there, right? So this is, but I just also want to sort of remind you that this developments have been happening over the last 7 decades. Going back to one of the earliest ones that I just want to remind you, those of you remember in the 80s, the handwritten addresses would go to the post office, somebody would read them and put them in a box. Okay? The technology quietly changed in the 1990s, in the middle of 1990s, to the point where 90% of the mail that was being received by USPS was going through these automated readers. It's a very, very simple task compared to what you're able to do today, right? But it was a major development, right? Speech synthesis, being able to have computers talk, was a big problem when I was a graduate student in the 1970s. It became much easier soon after that. Recognizing images, modeling languages, recommender systems, another technology. Minnesota not only played a critical role, Minnesota invented it. In the sense that if you're getting recommendations from any of these companies, you can sort of credit or blame Minnesota for creating this entire field of being able to figure out how do you figure out what people need. It's called the entire technology was built by faculty members in our department and recognized very well. So just to give you a sense that a lot of things happened over the last 7 decades, right? Okay. Now, what brought it to the point that we are coming to this meeting and having this hearing? Why is everybody talking about ChatGPT? Right? Why is And it's shocking. You know, if you ask questions to ChatGPT, you're amazed many times about how good its responses are, right? You know, what got us here, right? So, and it's, of course, compressing all of this work of 70 years into a couple of slides. Of course, it's going to be very hard. But I want to sort of talk about three major developments, right? Each of them have history going back multiple decades, right? Brought us here. And again, this would be the little technical part of it, but I will try to present it in a way that is understandable. So the first advancement that you should consider as to why is it so things are so different, and how come we are able to talk about things like generative AI today, but not 5 years ago, is these advances in how computers represent information. Now, of course, we all know computers can only deal with numbers, right? You know, zeros and ones, right? So if computers are doing any processing, anything that you work with has to be converted into number, right? If you're going to talk about people, objects, anything, you have to convert anything into a number, right? If you want to understand a language, you take any word and you convert it into a number, right? If the English language has 80,000 words in the dictionary and maybe millions of more variations of each one of them, well, each one of them has to be represented by a number, right? So if each one of them is represented by a different number, then the programs actually cannot be very capable. They cannot really be as effective as they could be. So already people were thinking over the last many, many decades as to how do you convert this word representation to something that is more meaningful. That is, if I'm talking about a coat and a jacket, they're very similar words as opposed to two different numbers that are completely unique. Computer and a laptop, they're very similar word, right? Things like that. So there was a technology, there was a methodology that was built called latent semantic indexing. It was in the big scheme of AI, it was a simple technology which was built for retrieving information from large amounts of data sets. It was invented in the 80s, but what came out very handy when the World Wide Web sort of came about in 1993, 94. So LSI, as it is called in 1998, led to the functioning of web in ways that would not have been possible otherwise, right? The Google won't exist if the LSI wasn't there before. Then there were a couple of technologies that were built actually in the 1988, almost 30 years ago. Convolutional neural network, again, a technical term, but the people who invented it, the group of people who invented it, some of the members of the group got the Nobel Prize just last year, right, for example. Now, it allowed them to sort of basically represent images in ways that we were not thinking about before. That is, it was inspired by the way the humans sort of work in their brain. And the third one that actually is extremely important that sort of led to a stream of things that brought us to the ChatGPT here was this ability to represent words as numbers in ways and manipulate them that you could not have imagined before. And that's sort of what made the language translation immediately superior by 2016. And to give you a sense of how much better this representation of words into numbers became, I'm giving you an example on the slide here. So if you have a word like Paris, which is the capital of France, there's a number for it. The computer is learning that number. Okay? There is a number for France that computer is learning. There's a number for Italy, the computer is learning. If you take the number for Paris, the computer has learned, subtract France out of it and add Italy's number to it, it becomes Rome. Imagine the kind of development that happened in which you're not taking numbers and converting them into random representations. And I just want to point out here the person who did this, okay? Got his high school a couple of miles away from here, got his bachelor's degree from University of Minnesota, okay? And when he did this, he was already chief scientist of Google. He actually is the person who made Google what it is today, starting in 1998, right? He's coming back here for the commencement in a few months, in March. In 2014, he established scholarship for University of Minnesota students. Each year, four students get $10,000 of of scholarship to study because he felt affinity to the University of Minnesota. I'm just giving an example of development that happened here, either in Minnesota by Minnesota companies or happened wherever they went after coming here. And I can just give you a series of examples like that. Okay? So this was a huge development, right? Now something even bigger happened after that, right? Again, it just happened to be again, which sort of took it way beyond this, right? Now humans, of course, if I am looking at word, we are very good at understanding the context. For example, if I tell you that I'm eating an apple, you would never think of Apple being a company, right? And if you sort of say, well, I went to the store to buy an iPhone, Apple store to buy an iPhone, you would never think of going to a supermarket to get an iPhone, right? How do you get that sense into the computer? And that was the development that sort of happened. It's called attention mechanism in a technical term. Transformer, you might have heard of this. And this technology, which was a direct extension of the previous technology I mentioned to you, brought us directly to ChatGPT. Of course, it's like a technology sort of started, and if you go back, the roots go back 70 years ago, but each one of them built on the previous one. Right? So this is the ability to represent information in ways that we were not thinking about before. Right? You know, this is one. Okay? The second one. Again, Minnesota has a very important role here. Much of what happened in artificial intelligence and big data analytics until recently, until this development happened, was that if you want to build models, you need data. And this data have to be in ways that can be used to build machine learning models, which is why you're going to a bank and you're trying to collect records of people who have paid their loans, who have not paid their loans, and using that data, you build a model. You're going to the hospitals, you're trying to do the same thing, right? And what happens then is that if you don't have the proper data that is representative, you run into all kinds of problems. The model's not doing as well as you would expect them to do, or failing miserably in ways that you don't want them to fail, right? So this was an advance, which was the ability for these machines to learn without having supervision. So this is called self-supervision, right? Now, this is a methodology which was extremely simple, again, became part of this technology that was built by the University of Minnesota alum Jeff Dean at Google, which is now, if you, in retrospect, it looks extremely simple. But this methodology has completely changed the field and brought us again to the world of ChatGPT. If I ask you to read the sentence, in autumn, fall from the trees. Now, most people will be able to figure out what this word would be or close enough to it. It'll be a fruit of some kind, right? Now, creating examples like these from the data that's available all over the world is trivial. You take a sentence, you delete a word, and say, can I predict it? And being able to do that, which means you don't need supervision from anybody. You know, if you have an image, I hide a piece of it. Can I reconstruct it? All of us can sort of tell by looking at this image that's just above it. There are boxes there, but you can tell what is behind those boxes, right? You know, you sort of have a sort of a continuity in the world, right? So this kind of idea again was invented by alumni of University of Minnesota at Google, and that has again changed the game, you know, completely in places. So the second advance. And the third advance, and I'm just going to, this will be my last slide, which will sort of talk about the technology, and I'll hand it over to Professor Melton Mux for more interesting topics, right? And this is the, again, a technology that was being developed in this field of AI for the last 70 years, right? And this is about learning from mistakes in the sense that you don't know, you don't always know what is right, and you try different things, and then you figure out what's working. And I just want to tell you as to the importance of this technology, which is in technical terms called reinforcement learning. Okay? I just want to give you an example of how powerful this technology is and what role it played in getting us where we are. I want to take you back to 1997. This is the year in which a computer built in Rochester, Minnesota, IBM Deep Blue, okay, allowed for the first time in the history of mankind to have a computer beat the world champion in chess. Okay? Now, of course, today you will shrug on it. I'll tell you why you will shrug on it, right? But the computing field was waiting for this moment for 30 years. A founding father of our field had expected that this would have happened in the mid-60s, but it took a lot longer. The computer was so fast that it could execute 200 million possible chess positions every second. Okay? It required a lot of computing power and a lot of knowledge to be able to do it. Forward that to 2017, 20 years later, the technology that I mentioned to you until now, a lot plus the reinforcement learning together, basically allowed a computer, given only the rules of the game, to learn chess by playing with itself, and in a few hours, beat the champion of the chess. Imagine. And that should have shook people up, right? That's also the time multiple other things happened, and all of them, reinforcement learning, played such a big role. And ChatGPT, the reason it does quite a bit, as well as you see, is because of all of the advances that I talked about earlier, and also because of the way OpenAI brought in reinforcement learning into the technology. So this is, hopefully it gives you a sense, there are a lot of technological advances that have happened over the period of the last 70 years. Many of them, of course, were contributed by people in the state, or the companies in the state, right? But then the future, of course, is for us to craft. Right? I think with that, I'm going to hand it over to my colleague.
Thanks, Vipin.
Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Vipin, and thank you to Senators Champion and Draheim, sorry, and committee members. Again, we're really appreciative to have this precious time with you to discuss AI and AI transformation. And over the next several slides, I'm going to cover several critical areas and examples, and I'm going to be focused on three sectors, talking about medical technology, food, climate, agriculture, and the materials and manufacturing. But I really want to underline that while I'm going to cover these three sectors, that AI's impact is really felt across all sectors of our economy. So I'm going to start with medical technology. This is an area which we all know is one that Minnesota has and is a leader globally. Okay, it's a crucial sector for us and our state's economy. We boast today a contribution globally of 3 to 5% of the medtech sector globally. And we know that AI-enabled smart medical technology will represent an additional $40 billion to Minnesota's GDP if we are able to keep up. Capabilities that will, what will this look like and feel like? So what we see is that AI is going to shift our care paradigm. It's going to shift us from being reactive to one that's more proactive and personalized in the care that we give. And it's going to help us to improve health equity if we do it right. And what that means is that folks throughout Greater Minnesota, including rural areas, are going to be allowed to have more targeted and personalized interventions closer to their homes. And this will be likely delivered through more virtualized and mobile services. Third, by integrating more data sources, how we think about healthcare, prevention, disease is going to change quite a bit. We're going to have a lot more information because we have all these new data sources around in the environment, things like soil, food, and also behavioral factors, a lot more about what we do and how that affects our health and how we can prevent and treat more proactively. Other key examples include advancements in precision medicine, drug discovery. This will be powered by AI, and we will be able to rapidly design novel interventions, and we list chemical as one of those. And so our investments in AI are really going to help us to realize this potential growth and transformation that lies ahead in medtech. And similar to medtech, the sectors of food, agriculture, and climate are also being revolutionized with AI. Some important statistics for the state of Minnesota, many of which are probably familiar to the committee. Our state leads the nation in food patents per capita. We also rank fourth in food product-related patents per capita. And there are multiple important examples where Minnesota has been at the forefront of innovation in these areas. Currently, the global AI and agriculture market revenue represents $1.5 billion and is expected to double by 2026, so that's only a year away. Correspondingly, the growth in jobs in agriculture and food science is projected to increase at about twice the rate of other occupations on average in the U.S. A few important examples of solutions in food, agriculture, and climate where AI plays an important role in the development and in the delivery, where AI is really important, include real-time prediction of water quality, more precise management of our livestock and crops, climate-resistant engineering seeds, prediction of carbon emissions using satellite imaging, identification of ingredient replacements to avoid volatile supply chains. All of this to make this particular sector more efficient and less waste and be able to produce more for our populations. So these innovations are, of course, essential locally, globally, of course, and a number of our key Minnesota companies, and you know, General Mills, Cargill, CHS, Hormel, Land O'Lakes, and there are others as well. And so now, turning into the last area, manufacturing and materials. You know, manufacturing materials today is approximately 13% of Minnesota's GDP, which represents over $58 billion annually. Almost half of Minnesota's Fortune 500 companies are in manufacturing, and AI is expected to add $1.1 billion to Minnesota's economy by 2033. So again, that's 8 years ahead. The contributions of AI are already being seen in this sector and will continue to advance. And this includes things like smart assembly lines, increasingly advanced robotics for manufacturing. And AI is expected to continue to enhance the automation and energy efficiency as well. Important examples include microelectronic chips that can be designed across a range of economic sectors for solutions, new materials for high temperatures, which will be important as our climate continues to change, including things like cement, fertilizer, green energy, batteries, providing for robust cybersecurity for various devices using AI, as well as the newest supercomputers, which you'll hear about quite a bit now, quantum computing. And overall, providing for smart manufacturing with real-time responsiveness. So overall, oh, I'm sorry, Senator Champion.
I have one question. What do you think the impact is going to be on our workers with the advancement of automation and energy efficiency in manufacturing? Because that's where sometimes, you know, jobs are created, individuals, you know, who want to do those jobs, and now if they're going to be replaced by automation for efficiency but also for productivity, what sort of impact is AI going to have on that market, and whether that will undermine your notion that AI in manufacturing will add $1.1 billion to the Minnesota economy by 2033?
Senator Champion, it's a great question. I will try to take a stab at it. So it is absolutely true that AI is going to change jobs. And I think our preparedness around it is really important in understanding how things will shift. If we look at agriculture alone, it's a great example where the modernization of the techniques that are used, you know, has fundamentally changed that. One thing that's really important, I think, to note just overall, there will be jobs from the perspective of we don't have enough people to actually do most of the things that need to happen today. We are actually quite strained for people in many sectors right now. So I think the key is really understanding where the puck is going and thinking about, I think, you know, I'm going to talk next about some of the education pieces, but the idea of how we upskill and prepare folks for this is going to be very important. And some of the skills will not necessarily be technology focused. I think we're going to absolutely have things that will need AI and data literacy, but there's going to be plenty of things in the creative space, plenty of things that will always need a human touch. Yeah.
Well, thank you. So maybe I'll wait with my next question to when you get to the educational portion, because that seemed to make sense, especially when you talk about preparedness and training and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. I want to see what your recommendations would be for this committee in order to think about our future, both yep. GDP and growth, and also making sure that we have a prepared workforce. So thank yep. you.
Yeah, and maybe one other comment. The numbers around growth in the economy really have to do with the growth that we see overall in the sector. And that means money made. Behind that, looking at what happens to the jobs and adjusting and being able to meet that and figure that out is going to be really important. So overall, AI, as we said before, is poised to contribute, we think, up to $15.7 trillion, as Galen said before, by the year 2030. And this will be a key enabler to our future. And I would submit, we would submit, that to remain competitive, Minnesota really does need to develop a robust AI ecosystem. And importantly, really also to emphasize notably, several states are already forging forward. Okay, so Wisconsin, one example of investment of $32 million at the state level. New York, this past year with the Empire AI Initiative, $400 million. Florida, $100 million through the state legislature, specifically around what they call AI University, mostly based through the University of Florida, which has also brought forth industry investment, innovators, startups, to really sort of propel this forward and gain additional workforce. This really does just reinforce the imperative and critical positioning of data science, AI, to Minnesota's economy. So our success in AI as a state requires solid partnerships among industry, academia, state government, and others. The university is, can, and should be a key catalyst to this in the AI initiatives and service of Minnesota. I'll briefly highlight a few key aspects, some of which Vipin covered well. We have some key leadership around AI climate change. There's an institute initiative which has been advancing climate smart agricultural practices. In the area of healthcare and AI, there's been recent recognition of Minnesota and several partners, including the University of Minnesota, around being a smart med tech hub. And this is hopefully going to position us for future national investment through the Economic Development Agency and a $17.5 million grant through the Centers for Disease Control, really to help develop a national outbreak response network. In the foundational areas of data sets, the University of Minnesota provides for several unique, large, and differentiating data sets, including the Minnesota Population Center, which is widely viewed as a national and international source for understanding surveys, trends of different parts of our population throughout the world. The Polar Geospatial Center, and the Center for Magnetic Resonance Research with decades of unique images. Finally, the University of Minnesota plays a key role in engaging the academic and broader community, including industry, around AI and data science. For example, the university is a leader in data science education. Its master's in data science program is currently ranked fourth in the nation. And the university does host a range of programs, conferences, workshops to advance partnerships, also talk about leading edge developments in AI, which is going to continue to evolve and transform, and upskilling, including certificates through its continuing education program.
So I have one question before we go to our next testifier. I'm certain that you heard of a guy by the name of Jeffrey Hinton, who is at least it's my understanding that he is supposed to be like the godfather of AI. And I remember seeing him on 60 Minutes, and he talked about how important AI is and the benefits of AI, but he also warned us of some potential challenges around AI.
Yeah.
So my question is, if you know Jeffrey Hinton, if you know of some of the articulated challenges that he articulated, do you agree with those are some of the challenges? And if so, what do you recommend as ways for us to protect ourselves from the downside of AI as we, you know, think about embracing the positive aspects of AI?
Yeah. Senator Champion, those concepts are some of the most important. In some ways, it has to be at the center of the work that occurs. Responsible AI is quite important. I happen to work in the healthcare sector. I'm a surgeon. I also serve at mHealth Fairview as our Chief Health Informatics and AI Officer. And, you know, the choices that, or the suggestions that AI makes has real life and death consequences. And being sure that the AI is being helpful and, in fact, in some cases not harmful, including in cases where we, for lack of a better way of putting it, edge cases where maybe we don't have enough data on certain individuals, or maybe it can exacerbate actual disparities. Responsible AI is incredibly important, and this idea of transparency is incredibly important. So, you know, again, in the healthcare sector, there are multiple groups that are really trying to lay that solid foundation to be sure that we are doing this well at a local level and at a societal level and at a national level. But it is a work in progress. It's incredibly important.
Thank you. Because one of the things, as I understand it and his argument, is that the computer has this ability, especially the sophistication of AI, has the ability to pull from a number of different data points. And so if you're not controlling those data points, you got to think about that. But it has the ability to pull from these number of data points and process the information in real time. And without a command, it will keep processing that information in its own way. Yep. And so that there's this possibility of losing control of the information in the AI system. That's how I understood it.
Yep.
Am I right or wrong?
Yep. And to maybe even underline your point further, Senator Champion, you know, in this, if we talk about the area of, like, say, social media, an AI that learns from social media, and we know there is a lot of misinformation out in social media. So AI that is potentially trained to, based off of what's out in the social media, and if there's not judgments around this is misinformation, this is not, right, et cetera, there can definitely be conclusions made by that AI that aren't real. Yeah.
Any other questions? Senator Pa.
I want to first say this is probably the most interesting hearing I've been on already. I absolutely love the information that you are sharing around AI, and I appreciate the time. The technology around AI is definitely exciting. And when I hear you talk about how Minnesota is leading in some of that, I'm excited for our state and proud. One thing that's always... I would say caused me some concern a little bit is corporate responsibility, making sure that we are using AI to benefit people and not to harm people. And the other thing that always has concerned me is the response that sometimes the technology outputs is only as good as the quality of the information that's inputted into there. So that's always been a concern, is that how is this information being looked at to make sure the quality of information being input is correct. And I've used, there's a lot of AI technology that I used to look at, and I say, wow. But on a practical, everyday use, as someone who just used AI like ChatGPT, I love ChatGPT, I've been using it for the last 2 years, and more so now than I did when I started 2 years ago. But I remember, like, when I was arguing, this is how crazy I've been using it, okay? I had an argument with my daughter, and my husband was giving me advice. And I said to him, none of that makes sense to me. I'll just ask ChatGPT and how I should go back and talk to my daughter after the argument in a way that's respectful to her, but also stands my ground. And I really, really literally put that into ChatGPT, and it gave me great advice. So I went back to my husband and said, see? Your advice did not work. And so, but those are the practical things that we use in our everyday life. That's great. But then also the other thing was, you know, as a public official myself, I do a lot of research on myself just to make sure that the stuff that's out there about me is accurate, right? And as I put that into, whether it's the web or ChatGPT, it spits out information. And the information it spits out is information that's been put into that database. And some of it accurate, some of it isn't. But what I realize is that, again, to the quality of the information, and I'm talking about in terms of real world, but also thinking bigger and deeper into, like, take other advances in medicine, other advances in farming, in agriculture, those kinds of things. But in a practical use, when I pull out information about myself, it spits out information back of what's been put out there. Mm-hmm. Some of it accurate, some of it isn't. So I could technically say I'm the queen of a country or I'm a billionaire, which would be nice. But it could say spit that information out that's totally inaccurate because that's what's been put into there. So I'm just thinking in terms of, let's say, misuse. And I say that because there's a lot of misuse, and I'm thinking about people who may put information into the system that could have outcomes for medicine, again, agriculture, anything that we can use that may misinform AI technology and what we get out from it. So thinking bigger than my everyday, you know, regular life, but like real things that can impact industries and innovation and creativity, and how do we control the quality of that information, knowing that it's only as good as what goes into there?
To testify to either one. Introduce yourself for the record, too, just so we're always.
Senator Champion, Senator Faw. I'll take a stab at a part of what you mentioned and then turn it over to my colleagues. I'm sure you've heard that ChatGPT can hallucinate, right? It can just make up things that are not true, right? I think this is an example of how we're never going to completely get the human out of the loop. So I think humans are going to have to be much more involved in things like communicating results from AI, managing ethical issues with AI, this final decision-making based upon AI. And so I think that's a place where jobs are going to happen and that we're going to have to be cognizant of developing those skills in our workforce as we move forward. Mm-hmm. As far as corporations, I've talked to, like I mentioned earlier, I've talked to we've all talked to a lot of corporations in the state of Minnesota and nationally. They're wrestling with those issues too, right? Almost all of them are setting up independent governance boards within their organizations. Mm-hmm. Each one's a little different. There would probably be a good idea to have some guidance for them eventually. And I do think there are serious public policy issues that are going to have to be addressed by you folks moving forward. Anything in a computer can be fooled if you put garbage in and get garbage out, right? And so those are things that you're going to have to address. I'll invite Professor Kumar, Professor Melton Mokes to add on to that.
Let me just add to that. You see the two workshops NSF asked us to organize. One I organized at their headquarters in National Science Foundation in March of 2023, and the second one was organized at the University of Minnesota campus just a few months ago. Okay? And the points that you raise, right, they're at the center of all the conversations that are happening in the field. And I will just add one more to it, right? You know, so basically, these are all the issues that communities are aware of, number one, right? Number two, the biggest advances in the field are being made while addressing those. And there is one very related concern that we all should be aware of in the context of this technology called generative AI, right? And it's even more important in the context of generative AI than otherwise. And that is, it does not know what it does not know. That is, it could give you a very sound advice, which is really good, and it could also give you an advice that may be terrible, and it still will not know. So as Professor Galen Jones said, humans have to be in the loop until the technologists figure out a way to improve that layer, and they are very far away from doing that. So these are excellent questions, and that's where I think the policy guidelines have to be there, right? You know, the guardrails have to be there. And but the point still is that the option for us is not to say that this technology has danger, so I'm not going to pursue this, right? This is like the Industrial Revolution. It's in the same league as this Industrial Revolution that started about 250 years ago, in the sense that you couldn't say anywhere in the world that I'm not going to be industrializing myself, right? You know, because somebody else is, and they're going to, you know, roll us over. So this is a technology that is very powerful, has a lot of consequences, both positive and negative, and we got to be cognizant. But thank you for bringing that very, very important point.
Thank you.
A follow-up. I see you have a couple more slides, so I'm going to let you finish your slides and make sure that you get a chance to finish your presentation, and then Co-Chair Dreheim has a couple questions as well once you finish.
Perfect. And maybe just one more thing to add, just building upon what my colleague said, this idea of AI and data literacy, we all will need to have that ideally, because it is part of our present even now, not just our future, but our present now. So the more we can gain that and have formal pathways for that will be really important. So coming back to us for a moment, most recently the University of Minnesota has been organizing our efforts around AI and data science, and we've been envisioning this and calling ourselves the University of Minnesota Data Science and AI Hub or Initiative, and we represent its current leadership. And our goals really center around building a collaborative community around AI, which includes advancing AI data science together to prepare the workforce to be AI ready, right? Equipping the workforce with skills and really honing that around the jobs for the future, right? And this does need to go all the way from K through 12 through undergrad, grad, and folks that need to come back and get upskilled or reskilled in various ways. And ultimately, we see as outcomes being able to demonstrate distinctive innovation that is being brought to the state amongst this robust ecosystem, which we're so proud of in the state of Minnesota, and being able to contribute directly to economic growth through these public-private partnerships, and be able to attract new companies and develop and nurture startups. So really, ultimately, our goals are really in service of demonstrating Minnesota as a national and global AI leader. So to wrap up, we really want to leave you with the message of the importance of AI and data science for Minnesota in terms of the need to focus, invest, and position Minnesota to be AI-enabled for our economy, really to foster an environment that's going to support public-private partnerships, that's going to drive responsible AI innovation and development, that's going to attract, retain, and train and upskill our workforce around data and AI literacy. And again, throughout that whole spectrum of learning, and we all continue to learn around these solutions that are going to come together. And it's going to leverage, we think, in service of the state, the University of Minnesota, along with this broader ecosystem across the state. So we strongly urge you to seriously consider mechanisms that are going to catalyze and coordinate the AI efforts throughout the state. In service of economic growth and to increase our competitive edge. And with that, on behalf of my colleagues, thank you again for this opportunity.
And well, thank you. You all have, you've done a wonderful job. And so we have some other questions from committee members. And as I mentioned, co-chair Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Champion. I appreciate that. And thank you for the presentation. We have been looking forward to this. So believe it or not, I find it ironic for the members up here. I don't know if you knew that Senator Rest has been working on this issue for quite a while. And if she can dive into it, we all can. So hats off to her. I'm sorry she had to leave. But I do think this is exciting. And, you know, Minnesota has been a leader in a lot of different areas. And I think we can be a leader as this progresses, too. But I think not only the economic benefits of it, but I think we can be a leader also in the ethics of it and help devise the safeguards that I think scare some people on this committee and I think in the public. So thank you. That was my way of saying thank you. And thank you to Senator Rest for digging into this too. I know I joined one of her calls in the off season. What we're here today to look at the economic impact of the potential of this big myth of AI. No, I shouldn't call it a myth, but this big umbrella of AI. And you know, I have some scribble that I took down. I did not put it in ChatGPT or some Gemini is the new one, but I'm old school a little bit when I. You know, my first question that I wrote down when you guys sat down is what your thoughts were on Stargate. On Stargate, President Trump's initiative yesterday with the $500 billion investment, and you know, just a 30-second elevator type response of how you think that will impact Minnesota, if at all.
Who
Oracle, yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with with that. Yep.
Well, if Senator Dreheim, Senator Champion, this initiative of $500 billion in resources underscores the original thing I was telling you, that it's a confluence of three technologies: computing, data, and algorithms. That hits directly upon the computing part. And this is exactly why every major corporation in the world is investing money into building infrastructure. Now, this resource that's being put together, hopefully, will keep the leadership in this area for the United States. I mean, it's a huge resource, and I'm glad it's happening. But I think it's multiple things have to happen, right? You know, the computing resources have to be there, but also the people have to be ready to leverage this technology. People have to be ready to advance the frontiers. So I think there are multiple things coming together, but I'm really happy to see. I saw that announcement yesterday. I did not know about it before. We were talking about in the academic community about investment like these, but at much smaller scale. And we've been talking about it for almost a year. It was a big topic of discussion at NSF. It's putting together a resource like this. But this is two orders of magnitude bigger than what we were expecting. So I'm very happy for it, and I'm waiting to hear more as to how it unfolds.
Co-chair Jan.
Thank you. Thank you for the response. You know, you mentioned data centers or data centers. You know, I've had communities reach out to me on the frustration of the red tape on trying to open or permit for a data center in around my area. And I know there's been others across the state that have run into some roadblocks, et cetera. And I think to move forward, we need these data centers. And I think it's a great opportunity in the rural area where I'm at, where I think it makes sense if there is a power source nearby, good baseload power, mm-hmm. and the water source. And I guess my question to you is that, as a novice in this area, is there anybody amongst the brain power that you brought with today, which I'm very impressed, thank you, that understands how much water is used to cool the data centers? And you know, what should we as elected officials who are trying to safeguard Minnesota, who want this type of investment in the state, but we also want to do the right thing when it has to do with our most precious resource, water.
All right, we have one who's coming up to testify. If you would introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and answer the question if you can.
Senator Champion and Senator Durham, thank you for that question. My name is James Wilgenbush. I direct Research Computing. One of the entities under Research Computing is the Minnesota Supercomputing Institute, and we're actually building a data center right now on campus, specifically so that we have the ability to retain our own data, and have access to that data at the speeds that are needed to compute on those data. And so proximity still matters with some of that, but also governance around that data is critical. And we especially see that with respect to the healthcare sector, where, for example, there are obviously ownership issues and control around privacy that we have to address at a level that we're comfortable with, not just as a state, but also as a university or as an entity responsible for those data. So those kinds of considerations come into play as well. And I think the question you asked is excellent. We see it on a regional basis where we have entities like the Massachusetts Green High Performance Computing Center strategically locating their data center in an area that utilizes a lot of hydro and wind power. To be able to get the cost down to actually have that sort of capabilities in state. And so I would love to be able to engage with you further in terms of how strategically it would be important for us to position ourselves around things like this to address emerging opportunities like Stargate and other opportunities.
And Senator Draham, is also my understanding when you think about data centers, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, you have to look at energy and the power grid, water, and the costs associated with putting it up. And it's my understanding that a data center uses a lot of energy at some point, but sometimes there is energy that still is available that some people want to put in their overall grid in order to be able to use that energy source, is my understanding, as one of the issues. Is that true, or am I, or did I read that in vain?
No, I think you're exactly right, Senator Champion.
And if I could just add to it, Senator Graham and Senator Champion, as you mentioned, the water and energy are two big issues, and this is precisely why Minnesota could be very well positioned to host data centers here. Because 6 months in the year, the cooling is not a problem. We have a supercomputing center, as Dr. Wilgenbush mentioned. For the first 30 years of its existence, the building on Washington Avenue had no heating. It was run, the computer was generating enough heat to heat the building. So the only fear we had was that the power goes down for more than 24 hours, what would we do? Okay, but coming back to this point here, so we are very well positioned. The 5 years ago, the computing consumed about 2% of electricity. Okay? Today, it consumed about 6% already. Okay? And with generative AI, the way it's going, and with $500 billion investment in an organization like this, it could become as much as 50% or more. That is, could become the dominant consumer of energy, which means if you need to put it in places there's a lot of renewable energy available, energy could be fed into the grid when it's access, and could be used by corporations everywhere. So it's not a surprise today that a lot of the big corporations are coming to Minnesota and paying big dollars. So I think we have to be ready for it, and it's an opportunity, and this is where we could be the leaders in the country in many ways.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you. And thank you for the response, both of you. And I guess where I'm going, I want to help, and I think part of the negativity in Minnesota is the permitting and the process. So how do we balance, you know, everything? So if you have any guidance on that, I would love to hear from you on the water use, the process that the U went through to get theirs built, if there were things that we could help with for the next group that wants to do that, is kind of what I'm looking at. You know, I think we all see the benefit. It's gonna be very competitive, and I don't know if we can compete with other states with the way our budget's looking, with doling out hundreds of millions of dollars. So the last thing, I think that we obviously have the climate for it, and I think we, with a little tweaking, we could have the power and we could have the water. So I think we're an excellent spot for the state. But I'm gonna pivot just a little bit to save time here. You know, in my opinion, we have two segments that you mentioned that are immensely important to the state, and one is the medical, and the other is the food and agriculture. So any advice on a high level for us in those two segments that could help Minnesota differentiate itself from the 49 other states?
Who would like to answer that question? You, Dr. Jones? Or are you going to call a friend? You're going to call a friend. Here we go. Once you sit down, if you introduce yourself for the record and go forward and answer the question, and thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Champion, Senator Dreheim. Galen Jones, Professor of Statistics, University of Minnesota. Frankly, I think Dr. Melton Mokes is probably best positioned to answer the issue around health care. I personally work a lot in data science and agriculture, all right? The types of things that I work on are around invasive species, precision farming, you know, and some things that are somewhat surprising in the way AI might be used in the future in those spaces. One project that I'm aware of, I'm not personally involved, is using AI facial recognition systems in order to assess the health and well-being of animals while they're in the barn. Like, you and I could not say that hog is doing well right now, but AI can help point that out. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in that space. I think that a lot of the same challenges arise there as in all the other areas, though, around ethical issues, around getting good data in these settings, you know, around communicating the results to people that can make the decisions about how to use it in those settings, right? One thing that that we've noticed at University of Minnesota, I'm sure y'all have heard of the farm initiative coming out of CFANS over there. We also have GEMS, which is a huge data set around agricultural data, in, you know, environment data, management data, and genetics data at the U. And all of these are efforts on our part to move that forward. I'll ask Professor Melton Mokes to address the healthcare issue.
Hi, everyone. Yes, Genevieve Melton Mokes, Professor of Surgery and Health Informatics. So, on the healthcare front, I think that we're very fortunate in many ways that we do have many of the pieces. I will say that there are a lot of silos today, really around some of the regulation, whether it's use of data across providers. So, you know, I care for patients primarily at Fairview Health Services, And how do we aggregate data, say, across the state to be able to do really, you know, interesting AI that's going to help improve, make new products and be able to do things like smart and med tech. So just as an example. And when we're talking about that, that means that we have to bring providers, industry, in some cases, payers as well. So I think some of the pieces around how we bring folks together in common for common incentive to be able to do this work better and accelerate it is really, really important. We have amazing med tech, and I think that, you know, we've been doing, I think, actually some really nice foundational work with the Smart MedTech Economic Development Hub that was created this past year. But it's really at its beginning, and it does need some catalyst. And I think it will differentiate Minnesota, I think, with the right investment right now. I think right now, it's unfortunately, without that investment, I don't think we're quite there to get the acceleration that we'd really like to get.
Can I add one thing?
Yes, you sure can.
Yeah, I've mentioned a couple of times that we've been heavily engaged with industry folks across a lot of sectors. They routinely mention complex challenges, and this is especially so in the agricultural space that I've found. They have really high ambitions for using AI in this space, but they're dealing with very complex agricultural, biological settings that are hard to understand. And they often say things, they see these challenges being too large to solve on their own. Mm-hmm. At the same time, at the university, we're not going to have the funds to train the $5 billion it took to train GPT, okay? But we can certainly help provide technical expertise and help innovate methods in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And so I want to come back to this idea that we keep wanting to really drive public private partnerships in order to make these things good for our state.
Senator Dreheim, and then we're going to go to Senator Nelson.
Okay, thank you. I'll speed it up. Thank you. So I appreciate the response. It's kind of so what, you know, the other states that were listed on your presentation, I assume when you say AI ecosystem and support, that's R&D for research is what they invested. Is that a correct statement?
Senator.
To the testifier.
Yes, that is correct.
Senator Dreheim.
So once again, my last comment, and I'll let other senators ask questions, I guess, is if you have a list of kind of the ethical safeguards that I know there's discussion amongst my colleagues. I'm not personally involved in it. You know, what do we do with AI? You know, is it the boogeyman or the savior kind of question? You know, any articles like that, I would love it personally if you'd forward them on. I think it's here. We have to do it. And we have a very diverse group of senators, some very tech-savvy ones and some very simple ones, and everybody in between. But the more information we have, the better. So I appreciate your knowledge coming here and sharing it with us. But if you do run across an article or mm-hmm. something you think would help guide us, I would love to hear from you. So thank you.
Senator Dreheim, I have several in mind, and we'll make sure they're shared with you.
And also share it with the rest of the committee. That would be
yes,
great. Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for holding this hearing. I mean, this is really the issue that I think is on many people's minds, and we're in a unique position as policymakers. And I think that's critically important. And so I come away today with even a lot more questions than when I entered. And so I'd like to just mention a couple things and maybe ask for some more information. There's this whole litany of policy issues falling in all, you know, privacy, resources, energy, all of those things. And so at some point, it'd be nice just to get a very brief list of those policy issues that we should be considering certainly by topic or maybe, and I know it won't be all-inclusive because we'll keep finding new things. But an area that I'm particularly interested in, full disclosure, I live in Rochester. I've had benefit of many of the just great innovations. It's a great time to be alive. And there's two things that I'm particularly interested in. One, the MedTech Hub. I'm so pleased that we've been designated as this MedTech Hub. I think it's imperative that we take full advantage of that. And so things that might need to policy issues at the state, certainly I know finances are important as well. I'd be very much interested in those. I also serve on the tax committee, and so we know that those tax incentives can be very important, particularly when we're talking about the big data centers, and also the R&D tax credit. I was glad to hear that that was brought up. And so those are two areas, particularly on the tax side. What kinds of things can we do regarding tax policy that can best position Minnesota to continue to be a leader in our MedTech Hub and in AI in general, and all within the context of, you know, we're looking at a $5.1 billion budget deficit in the next budget. So things are going to be challenging, but we really have to be forward thinking and forward looking. And so I'll probably go home and ask ChatGPT about all of this. No, what I really want to do is I really want to hear from you, the experts, and that can maybe help guide us so the decisions we make really help position us for bright futures. Thank you.
To any of the testifiers, just jump right in.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Nelson, I am not an expert on tax policy, okay, but we do have, I am aware of some people that are, and I can get information from them and share it with everyone.
Thank you for that.
Genevieve, would you like to say anything?
So I think these are excellent questions, and, you know, I think there's a lot that we can share, not only from what we know, but looking nationally at various states that are really starting to think about these policy issues. And in fact, Europe as well, right? There's been quite a lot of work around many of these issues around policy that have to do with AI. So we can certainly bring that back. And the same for MedTech Hub as far as how we can incentivize it further. Yeah.
Any follow-up, Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. I will look forward to that. And just the last thing I forgot to mention, but I know it would not be far from your thinking as we kind of develop these things, we have to look at the environment in which we live. Good things, yeah, it's a cold environment. That can be really helpful. But also, we are one of the higher tax states in the nation, no matter kind of like what industry you look at, but especially on businesses. And so we need to kind of look at how we can counteract that. So thank you so much.
And to the testifiers, we do not expect you to get into the debate as to whether we're one of the highest tax states in the nation. So we're going to let that one go by us, okay? Any other questions to the testifiers? Susan, Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair Champion. I could talk about this all day. Just say this is one of my favorite hearings, but I wish that we could have more conversations when it comes to AI in the public, because I think a lot of regular folks, our constituents, Minnesotans, have a lot of questions and a lot of interest as well, but this is really informational. So as our country, our state, and just public investment goes into AI technology, I'm just wondering, from your point of view, what can we do to ensure, one, equitable access to AI technologies? Two is making sure that when we say access, what does that actually mean for regular folks like us or small businesses or entrepreneurs? So it's not just the big corporations who have millions and billions of dollars to invest that get to benefit from the advancements of AI, but that our regular folks do and our state does. And what's our role in that as a state as well? Just love to hear your thoughts on it.
To the testifier, anyone in particular want to take on that question?
Senator Champion, Senator Fah. One of the advantages of AI, in my view, is it's going to be accessible to smaller businesses and individuals. And it's going to allow them to do things that were not possible before. Now, there are examples of this, but I really think that in addition, it's going to lead to a lot of startup growth around these very same topics. So I think there's a ton of opportunity. I think that we are already encountering AI in our daily lives, and that includes everybody from six-year-olds to on up, okay? I'll ask Professor Kumar, would you like to add anything?
I think you just said it, but again, the key thing is this: all of us have to make decisions, each of the states, each of the organizations, everyone in our lives. And sitting and doing nothing is not an option. And I think that's the absolute key. And as Professor Jones mentioned, this mindset, AI mindset, that we're sort of creating is meant to address all of these issues. So to access, to basically get Minnesota ready for this new technology. If we don't, we'll all suffer, you know. So I think you're asking the right questions. Everybody is asking those questions, and everybody's trying to figure out how to respond. And those of us in the country, or in the world, who do a better job of answering them would reap the benefits.
I would like to add one thing, please, that I meant to say earlier. Professor Milton Mokes mentioned this holistic approach to education from kindergarten mm-hmm. through higher ed and training afterwards, right? And I really believe that there has to be, we don't need to be teaching kindergartners about transformer models, okay? But there's no reason why, you know, from the very beginning, these things cannot be integrated into our curriculum mm-hmm. And people can enjoy data literacy and AI literacy being developed throughout their educational careers. There's a clear need for a statewide strategy on that and investment in that aspect of it, because the folks that are data literate and graduating high school, they're going to have opportunities because of AI that they would not have had before, that might have required a bachelor's degree or a master's degree.
And let me say that you read my mind. So I'm not sure if you're really a robot or not, so I got to figure that out. Because I had that circled. Because one of the things that I do think is important for us to have a real discussion about is, number one, AI in general. And thank you, Senator Pop, because this is why we have these sort of discussions. Because to me, it is important for us to be forward thinkers. Mm-hmm. If we're policymakers, sometimes policymakers only think about what's right here in front of them instead of thinking about what's in front of me. And what about our future? So to me, that's really important. And so thank you for talking about the holistic K to through higher ed approach to attract, retain, and train a skilled and diverse workforce, because that's important. I think it's also important for us to think in real time, because I think you mentioned on several occasions the importance of the data points that the AI system is able to access. Because if the information is wrong, then it's going to ascertain or take in information that's wrong and use it as a part of its analysis, and then you end up getting something that was well-intentioned but wrong, and access is important. So let me pause there and say thank you to the University of Minnesota. One of the other things I think is important is for the University of Minnesota to use its wealth of knowledge in order to help inform policy and work as a partner with us, because a part of the disconnect sometimes with the legislature is that we sometimes think that the university is out on a silo by itself and never mm-hmm. sharing all the information that we're giving you money for, right? And so I think that if we all work together, you will get a chance to enlarge your capacity as you are enlarging our capacity for the benefit of the decisions that we have to make for Minnesotans. So thank you so much for that collaboration, and thank you for the information around training. And we know that you have a new president, so give our salutations to Dr. Rebecca Cunningham, because it's my understanding she's trained as a MD as well. So thank you so very much. Anything else before we get ready to go? If nothing else, members, that concludes our business for this meeting. Thank you again to all of the presenters and to our committee members for being here to learn about this important technology. Our next meeting will be on Monday, January 27th, and honorable Senator Dreheim will be chairing that meeting, and we will hear from the state demographer and get an update from Deed as well. With that, the committee is now adjourned. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.